Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Michael Gibbons, Chief Judge, Nevada Court of Appeals. I'm in Carson City. I'm joined today by Judge Jerry Tao and Judge Bonnie Bulla, both of whom are in the Las Vegas courtroom. Welcome to our video conferencing oral argument again. We've started this morning and continuing on this afternoon. We did this in May also, and it worked pretty well, so hopefully this time it will go accordingly. We're still engaged in some restrictions due to the COVID-19. We wear masks if we're going to be close to other people. I'm in the courtroom in Carson City. It's very spread out here. There are two IT staff members, one IT and one from the clerk's office. So in Las Vegas, it's a little closer together. I see counsel don't have masks, which is nice. We'd much rather see you in person. At least we could see a smile.
Yeah.
Judge Tao, Judge Bulla, would you like to make any welcoming comments?
Thank you both for being with us today. We really appreciate it. We wish you were here in person, obviously, but we are looking forward to this presentation. And again, thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, I just want to echo thank you, both of you, for being flexible. We're all trying to feel our way through this process, and this is an unusual way of doing things, and hopefully it won't keep going this way forever, but we appreciate your being able to work with our IT guys to get this up and running, and we're excited to hear the argument.
We generally have been asking fewer questions in our cases that are being handled by video, so counsel are getting a full opportunity to present your arguments. Not that there won't be questions, but we're just asking fewer questions, so that's the way it's happening. So our first case this afternoon is Leon Dudley Williams III versus Clear Recon Corporation and other respondents. This is case number 77112-COA. This case is also part of our pro bono program. So we have today for the appellant Ms. Gina Session. Thank you for taking this case on. It's much appreciated. And also for the respondent, Mr. Jory Garbedian. Did I come close to the pronunciation?
You got it, Ryan.
Okay, Garabedian, phonetically.
Yes. Yep, that's good.
All right, thank you. All right, Ms. Session, would you like to reserve any time for a rebuttal argument?
Chief Judge, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right. Both of you should be able to see the timer on the screen, and there'll be a signal at the 5 minute mark then too, but it's up to you when you actually stop, Ms. Session. All right, you may go ahead then for the appellant.
All right, Judge Gibbons, may it please the court. My name is Gina Session, and I'm pro bono counsel for Leon Dudley Williams III in this matter. And if I had to have a theme for this case, every time I read through the record, I just have this question that it flashes in my mind about what was the rush? What is the rush in this case? The respondents took a great deal of time to file an answer in this matter. The complaint was filed in March of 2018. And there wasn't an appearance filed until, I believe, July 2018. And during that early period in the case, there was a TRO and a preliminary injunction. The case was found to have merit. Mr. Williams' home, this is his residence of, by now, it's been 17 years. He felt like it wasn't going to be up for sale and out from under him suddenly because he had the injunction in place. And then Mr. Williams' attorney withdrew. And during just a, you know, that was end of July. And then we get, it's just boom, we get an answer, we get a motion for summary judgment, we get a ruling for on the motion for summary judgment. And I regret in my opening brief that I didn't make it clear about the most important part of things that happened really quickly here, was that the injunction was lifted and Mr. Williams' house was put on the market again. And Mr. Williams rushed out, got an attorney, but by the time that all happened, there had already been the minute order and the request for rehearing was filed, and the next day a written order was filed granting the summary judgment motion. But why the rush? You know, when you look at the picture, it would appear that all these things happened because Mr. Williams was not represented by counsel. He didn't have his defense in place or be able to defend himself from these things. The motion for summary judgment was 67 pages. So just briefly to kind of give you an idea where I want to go with my argument, I think there's some important, there's some severe irregularities in notice in this case. And I understand, and I know you've read the briefs, that this wasn't argued below, but I feel strongly that based on the record, that there's some issues about whether Mr. Dudley had notice of the answer, or Mr. Williams Dudley, had notice of the answer, or had notice of the summary judgment motion. I want to talk about the Rodriguez factors, and in this case, it really favors relief. We had a pro per defendant. He didn't sleep on his rights. He acted swiftly, and really those factors favor relief in this matter. Public policy favors decisions that are on the merits. I know that the court below said that their granting of the summary judgment was on the merits, but it was a 67-page summary judgment motion with no opposition. So I'm hard-pressed to see how that would be considered on the merits. And then finally, you know, I've argued and I believe that based on the, you know, the final sale date that was in October of 2018 of the residence, that there have been the three postponements under the statute that would require this to go back through the process, that there should be a new notice of default. And if that occurs, then Mr. Williams will have an opportunity to apply and participate in the mortgage foreclosure program, the foreclosure mediation program, which is what he's been looking for all along. So, Mr. Williams, I wanted to say a little bit about Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams is an elderly gentleman, and he's a talker. He talks a lot, and I have many lengthy conversations with Mr. Williams. And in every conversation, Mr. Williams would say to me, you know, I was never served with that motion for summary judgment. I was never served with that motion. So maybe the first five or six times Mr. Williams told me that he hadn't been served with the motion for summary judgment. I've heard this before from people, litigants, that typically for me the case has been that they didn't pick up their certified mail, or they didn't, lost it in the shuffle, but there's always a record that that service occurred. And so while I was very skeptical of Mr. Williams' contention that he was never served with the motion for summary judgment, I was pretty shocked when I actually did review the record in this case and realized that the record supports what Mr. Williams said occurred. He, you know, when I look at the record, July 30th of 2018, the judge granted the motion for the attorney to withdraw from representing Mr. Williams, and that withdrawal was mailed and properly served on Mr. Williams. Then on August 20th, there was an answer filed by the respondents, and the certificate of service does not indicate that there was mail, certified mail, or any kind of mail service on Mr. Williams, as had been done by the judge when she had served that previous order. Similarly, with the motion for summary judgment, that shows that it was served electronically, that there was no mail to Mr. Williams. Interestingly enough, I when in reviewing the record again this morning, on September 11th, the respondents did. They had filed a request for exemption from arbitration, and that was properly served on Mr. Williams by mail. So it wasn't that they couldn't or didn't, you know, didn't know how that occurred. So, I understand, you know, that there's my problem with this argument, and I'm pro bono, and I came into this case obviously late, but my problem is, of course, that this was not argued below in that request for rehearing. But I think, like I said, what was the rush here? And can you imagine that the attorney below, the house is on the market. It's about ready to be sold. It's, I don't know, October 2018, there was a sale date for the house again. And he is trying to save this man's house. And so he is throwing everything into that motion for rehearing that you know, he's recently been hired, and he is trying to save his house. And so I can forgive Mr. Bond for not, perhaps, and perhaps I have no doubt that Mr. Williams told him, like he told me, that there wasn't service of the summary judgment.
Ms. Session, if you don't mind, let me just see if I can drill down on your argument here. On the motion for summary judgment, the service indication is that it was served electronically by electronic service through the Odyssey system. Are you saying that there's a question about whether that electronic service was successful, or are you saying that the electronic service was successful but it wasn't enough and it should also have been served by mail? What are you saying here?
I'm saying Mr. Williams only, he did not have the ability to receive electronic service, which is why, and once his counsel withdrew, he was served by certified mail at the address of the subject property. And so there was not the ability for him to receive any kind of electronic service.
Ms. Session, how do we get around the fact that the failure or the issue that your client wasn't properly served was not argued below? And how do we address then EDCR 2.20E, which is the local rule that allows the court to enter summary judgment?
Right. Bull, I'd be a poor attorney if I saw this sort of manifest injustice in the record and didn't bring it to the attention of the court. But even if we don't entertain that notice issue, the Rodriguez factors still apply in this case. He promptly made it clear to the court that the court knew he was not represented by counsel. He had recently gotten counsel. There's no reason that I can see why counsel shouldn't have been allowed to have time to properly review the record and respond to a 67-page motion for summary judgment. And so even if the court doesn't want to entertain the issue regarding notice, public policy would still favor a decision on the merits in this case. And even though the court said this was a decision on the merits, I don't see how a pro per defendant, 67-page summary judgment motion, no opposition, how that could be considered a motion, a decision on the merits.
Thank you.
No, I'll reserve my time.
All right. Mr. Garabedian, you may go ahead for the respondent.
All right. As I was saying, I disagree with my colleague, Ms. Sessions. She asked, what's the rush in this case? And the rush is that Mr. Williams, who's owned this property since June of 2013, acquired this property subject to a mortgage when he was not a borrower on the loan. He acquired this property without any consent from my clients or their predecessors. He basically took this property subject to a defaulted mortgage deed of trust. As a result, foreclosure proceedings ensued, and notice of default was recorded in May of 2017. It was mailed to Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams, in the record, admits to receiving stacks of documents about foreclosure notices. He, in February of 2018, the notice of sale was recorded. He also admits to receiving the notice of sale. Now, on the eve of the sale, he decides to file his wrongful foreclosure lawsuit, arguing primarily that he didn't have the opportunity to pay off this loan or cure the default. And so here we are about 5 years later, after acquiring the property, that he has no ability to do so despite having received these foreclosure notices. Now, initially the court did grant a TRO and a preliminary injunction enjoining the sale. Fortunately, my client wasn't able to retain counsel on time, so it did go unopposed, and so I had to fall on the sword, and the preliminary injunction was entered at that time. And with that preliminary injunction, what's notable as part of that preliminary injunction is the court ordered that a payoff be provided to Mr. Williams and his counsel, which was provided in April of 2018. Well, the landscape changes in July and August 2018 when, lo and behold, Williams' counsel withdraws because of fees issues. Now, in the interim between that period, Mr. Williams' first counsel said, Mr. Williams has the ability to pay off this loan. Let's hold off on litigating. Just give us some time to put together a proposal. And that went out the window once the attorney withdrew. And so that's when my clients and I decided it was time to just stop this madness and proceed with the motion for summary judgment. So in regards to the motion for summary judgment, it was filed in late August 2018. The certificate of service does state it was served by the court's electronic register, e-service system, but it was also mailed to him. And the reason why this court can infer that it was mailed to him is because if you look throughout this record and at the hearing on the motion for rehearing, his counsel says, Mr. Williams dragged his feet until after the motion for summary judgment was granted for lack of opposition and based on the merits. He dragged his feet to retain his counsel at that point. Also, prior to the motion for summary judgment, and I'll agree with Ms. Sessions on this, Mr. Williams is definitely a talker. He had visited myself personally to discuss the case, try to discuss more resolution, at which point, and this is in the record at the motion for rehearing, at which point I told them we're not continuing the hearing, we're not delaying the opposition, you've had enough time for foreclosing. And so after that, once he gets the minute order, then he goes ahead and then he retains the counsel that he had consulted with prior to the motion for summary judgment being filed. And so at the motion for rehearing, which Mr. Bone, who was Williams' new counsel, the court saw through Mr. Williams' delay taxes, which I'm just going over now, and denied the motion for rehearing based on the procedure and the merits of the argument. And so what we look at what's on appeal here is the opening brief charges error to the court's decision to deny a motion for rehearing, and it brings the argument under Rule 60B1. Now, the problem is that any motion must state with particularly the grounds for seeking the order. I challenge the court to find anywhere where it says that it's seeking relief under Rule 60B1 versus any other post-judgment motion. It's not in there. And unfortunately for Mr. Williams, this court is not at liberty to hear 60B1 arguments on the first time of appeal. That discretion lies with the district court, and this court's job is to review whether or not the district court abuses its discretion. But because none of the Rule 60B1 factors were ever raised, the court can't be held to have abused its discretion. Now, I will say this as far as the motion for rehearing, as far as what it should be construed of, and that's a motion to alter or amend judgment. And in the AA Primo Builders case, Nevada Supreme Court kind of did away with a distinction on this particularity requirement on what the motion is based. It basically says that generally, regardless of a label, a motion to reconsider, vacate, set aside, or re-argue a final judgment will ordinarily be construed a Rule 59E motion if made within 10 days of entry of the judgment. All that satisfied here. So I will say that this motion, if anything, but down below qualifies as a 59E motion. The problem, again, for Mr. Williams is that he doesn't discuss what the 59E factors are anyway, which include correcting manifest errors of law, newly discovered or previously unavailable evidence, need to prevent manifest injustice or change in the controlling law. And in fact, if you look at the motion for rehearing, it is nothing but a late opposition to the motion for summary judgment. And within that motion for rehearing, what does Mr. Williams do? He expressly admits and agrees with the district court's original order granting summary judgment that his opposition was untimely. That is stated expressly in the motion itself. It's even stated in the papers on appeal where Mr. Williams tried to apply for an injunction pending appeal. He has acknowledged throughout this case that his opposition was untimely. I believe I've already covered the review under Rule 60B1 and then the Rule 59A, that this motion for rehearing is best construed as a Rule 59E motion, but that none of the factors regarding correcting manifest errors of law, newly discovered or previously unavailable evidence, the need to prevent manifest injustice or changing controlling law were presented along with this motion. In addition to that, I know that, again, for the first time on appeal, we're now dealing with, well, motion for summary judgment was improperly served and Mr. Williams never received it. I would submit to the court that this argument is just completely waived. First and foremost, I think it's very important to look at the motion for rehearing wherein Mr. Williams, through his counsel, expressly admits that his opposition was untimely filed. That was a focal point in the motion. That was a focal point in the opposition to the motion for rehearing. So for all intents and purposes, the court had no reason to know or believe that there was any issues with wrongful service at the hearing. So I'm not sure how the court could abuse its discretion on something that wasn't even properly raised in front of them when it very well could have been. In addition to that, in the motion for rehearing, and I encourage the court to take a look at it in its entirety because there are some omissions in there that I think are pertinent to show that he did receive notice of the motion and that it just dragged his feet to do anything about it. Number one, he admitted that he consulted with Mr. Bone after the motion for summary judgment was filed, but that he had dragged his feet to retain him. Also, the record states that Mr. Williams had contacted me as the respondent's counsel about the motion for summary judgment, and at that time there was resolution discussions discussed, but at no time, and I made it clear in the record that my clients were not willing to delay the adjudication of the motion for summary judgment, both the hearing and the opposition. Also, in addition, this court, I think that there's an underlying policy argument here with considering this argument of service for the very first time on appeal, because I dispute, and I want the court to understand that I dispute that it was not mailed. It was mailed. And so by not raising it properly in the motion for rehearing where the court had a chance to correct its errors, I had no opportunity to amend or show that it was in fact mailed. So it's incredibly prejudicial to my clients in regard to this appeal. But in addition to all that and the motion for rehearing, even if the court was technically supposed to grant it because of service issues, I would submit to the court that harmless error occurred. Under EDCR 2.24, even if the motion for rehearing should have been granted, the court was still free to make a final disposition of the cause without re-argument. And that's essentially what it did here. And if you look at the motion for rehearing, the opposition, and the arguments at the hearing, all that was addressed was 6 new claims of wrongful foreclosure not advanced in the complaint. And so the court went through this and addressed this. Again, I'll briefly touch base on these. There's 2 pre-foreclosure notices that were supposed to be sent to the borrower. That's NRS 107-500 and NRS 107-0805. But both those notices are to be sent to the borrower, not the homeowner. It's expressed under the statute. So any contention that he didn't receive or was entitled to those notices is just completely without merit and baseless. In addition to that, Mr. Williams had claimed that he didn't receive the notice of default, but at the same time, he did acknowledge he received stacks of papers shortly after the notice of default relative to his foreclosure. And also in the opposition to motion for rehearing, we attached an affidavit of mailing showing that the notice of default was in fact mailed to Mr. Williams. The next sort of substantive issue is that Mr. Williams claims that the notice of default should have identified him as a property owner. There's no requirement under NRS 107 anywhere that says that, and that's just a futile argument. The next kind of argument was that the lender didn't record a foreclosure certificate, but if you look at the timelines of this notice of default, the notice of default was recorded and mailed in between the sunset of the old mediation program and the beginning of the new mediation program, which took effect in June 2017. Mr. Williams, under the Senate bill that enacted this legislation, could have opted in by filing a petition within 30 days of the effective date. He did not do so. And so based on that, there's no grounds for him to elect mediation. The lender and the trustee never had to rescind its notice default or provide new notice. It was on the burden on Mr. Williams to go ahead and file a petition with the court to elect mediation, which he did not do. And then finally, there was discussions in the motion for rehearing about the exceeding of 3 oral postponements of the sale. It's clear from the record that there were only, in fact, 3 postponements but 4 sale dates. I know Ms. Sessions argues in her reply for the first time that, well, since you've postponed or canceled the sale as a result of the injunction pending appeal, that now the sale has to start over. That is incorrect. NRS 107-082 states that any new sale information after the third postponement must be provided by notice as provided in NRS 107-080. The only sale notice or the only information regarding the sale, it's contained in the notice of sale. So simply recording a new notice of sale corrects anything and picks up where we left off. So based on that, Your Honor, I respectfully request that the court affirm the district court's ruling to deny a motion for rehearing, or in the alternative, affirm, and in addition to that, affirm the court's decision to uphold the order granting summary judgment.
All right, thank you, Mr. Garabedian. You have 2 minutes and 22 seconds left. Do any of the judges have any questions?
No.
All right, then your argument is concluded. Thank you very much. Mr. Jensen, how much was the time left for Ms. Session?
3 minutes and 17 seconds.
Okay, all right. I have to reset my timer then. 3:17, you said?
Yes.
All right, I'm starting now. I'm in session. Are you ready to go?
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to try to make this quick. So I want to make clear that possession of the motion for summary judgment is different than formal service of the motion for summary judgment. Clearly, at some point, Mr. Williams became aware of and had the motion for summary judgment, but we don't know when. We don't have any certificates of service. Mr. Garabedian keeps just saying about certificates of service, but those are fugitive documents. So the purpose is to have a record in the court about service and about the timing and being able to respond. And to also be clear, there's never been an opposition to the motion for summary judgment, ever. There was a request for a rehearing that was hastily put together to try to save this man's house, but there has never been an opposition to the motion for summary judgment. Whether we're talking about 60B1 or 59E, it's a manifest injustice under 59E. This is not a decision on the merits. He should have been allowed to argue and fully prep and prepare and respond to a 67-page summary judgment motion. He was unrepresented by counsel. Counsel for respondents took 5 months to get counsel to participate in this lawsuit. And now he's going to say that Mr. Williams slept on his rights when he took less, you know, than a month to try to get someone to help him oppose a 67-page summary judgment motion. The judge had already issued the decision. She didn't change the decision. She looked at, had the hearing, but her decision had already been issued before the day after they filed their motion for rehearing. The three postponements and 107.082 says that they have to go back through NRS 107.080, renotice it. Mr. Williams also has rights under 107.086 because this is owner-occupied housing. And so what I'm asking for the court to do is either send this back to the district court so that it could be a decision on the merits and there could be a full and proper response to the 67-page motion for summary judgment, or alternatively to order the respondents to restart this process and allow Mr. Williams to participate in the mortgage, the foreclosure mediation program as an owner occupied housing, as a person that owns and occupies this house. And I don't know if I have time because I don't have a clock, but thank you very much for your time today.
All right, 15 seconds left. Do any of the judges have any questions?
No, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Session. Again, taking this case in the pro bono program, all right, there's your time. Anyway, we really appreciate you taking this case on. It's not an easy situation when you have the record that's below and you make your argument, but you did an excellent job, Mr. Garibetti, and you did too. Sorry about the technical problems. The whole state system was down yesterday due to a fiber optic line being knocked out. They thought it was fixed this morning. We don't know what the issue is now, but we've recovered and we made it through the argument. The court will take this under submission and have a written decision in the near future.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.